present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you and welcome to the first in a new series. We'll begin by catching up on some of the stirring events which have rocked the world while we were away, starting with this dramatic cutting, read in its entirety by Brian Perkins and taken from the Hastings Citizen.
Firemen rushed to a house in St. George's Road, Bex Hill, after smoke was reported coming out of the chimney. But it turned out to be nothing more than smoke from a fire burning in the grate.
And that scoop came to us courtesy of Bob Robinson of London, who's easily pleased. And on now to our two teams of equally excitable panellists. On my right, the young and impressionable team from Private Eye, John Wells and Richard Ingrams. On my left, though claiming to sit somewhere in the centre, is the even younger Liberal Democrat MP, Charles Kennedy, and next to him, his guardian for the night, Alan Corran. Round one opens with this curio from the Whitby Gazette.
Taxi drivers required fully part-time, various hours available, suit creamologist or someone with an interest in yogurt.
Peter Wallace of Stockton-on-Tees spotted that one. Our first question in the series goes to Richard Ingrams. Richard, who might have been happy to use the red flag for a red carpet?
A royal personage.
Yes.
And he went to Hungary.
That's right.
Along with Lord Young and a lot of other people to drum up business. And then tried to... No, it was a big cultural event, and he made a speech saying that Karl Marx was a frightful man and quite appalling. And what was happening was wonderful, all these people being overthrown and so forth. And coming together again in this wonderful Europe thing that goes on.
Yes, absolutely.
That was him.
So the question is about the political rant given by arch-demagogue Prince Charles. He was in Budapest for the first ever state visit to Hungary. It didn't involve Hungary being visited by an entire state. Speaking in Hungary's recently renamed Pepsi Square, the prince went on to denounce the cruel tyranny of living under an oppressive regime and to express relief at managing to get away from one for a few days. John Wells, first question for you. Who was a hair's breadth from meeting all the president's men?
Oh, poor Dennis. yes.
John Wells impersonator.
Yes. Yeah, it was a tragic moment because J. Danforth Quayle was finding his way with great difficulty up the steps. And in Bob Dennis, fresh from his 75th birthday experience on the Greens in the United States, and failed to recognize Mrs. Thatcher on account of the jet lag, and was then helped upstairs on a stretcher to go and, as he put it, shave, I think. Anyway, yes. That's roughly the answer.
It is. It concerns Dennis Thatcher. I knew something would eventually. Returning to number 10... returning to number 10 from an American trip to find the Prime Minister in her best frock, ready to receive Vice President T. Danforth Quayle, America's gross national product. It was on a day trip to Britain, supporting Bob Hope. Asked if he'd like to meet the boy wonder, Dennis declined, saying he'd prefer a little shave. Although his exact words were, "No, thank you, I'd rather take a razor to my throat." Short pause now for this item, culled from a Dublin newspaper.
For sale, second-hand headstone, suit anyone by the name of O'Reilly.
A. Maxwell of Birmingham dug that one up. Charles Kennedy, welcome to the programme, and we start you off with a nice southernist question. Charles, how is prefix snobbery fueling the new numbers racket?
Oh, this is British Telecom doubling the output in London, and I was delighted to see, I read a snippet in the newspaper during the week, that of all people, on the day of the great turnover or handover or changeover, whatever you call it, Maureen Lipman had a migraine headache, and she phoned her doctor and she forgot to use the new code. True. The new social order in this country is, are you 071 or 081, darling?
Yes. Phone subscribers lumbered with the apparently down market 081 prefix can now join the inner crowd by purchasing an 071 number for a mere £2,000, which is how much it'll cost for a little yellow van to come and move your house 2 miles down the road. Finally, in this round, Alan, your first question, which, as tradition dictates, is preceded by a short burst of clueful music.
You're crying, little boy blue. Are you unhappy, little boy blue?
Well, that was Little Boy Blue, a reference to one of the protagonists in your first story, Alan. Why did the boys in blue see red when bad sports showed their colours?
There were 16 Japanese stories in the news this week, Barry.
Why?
Something tells me this is not one of them. This is set in Bournemouth, and this is the upset of the police, who a year ago went down to the Good Burgers of Bournemouth and nudged them out of their deck chairs and said, look, in a year's time there's going to be a football match here and we think this is a rather bad idea. And they said the same to the diminutive Moynihan and to numerous other people on sports councils up and down the land, and all this was disregarded, as a result of which Leeds United and Bournemouth had a go at one another on the beach, and blood and ice cream mingled in the sand, and it's all about that.
Right, absolutely right. Apparently the FA ignored clear warning signs, such as the fact that Bournemouth seafront had been boarded up since January, and that several hundred Leeds fans have put in an early block booking on Bournemouth juvenile courts. Colin Moynihan, the government's sports minuscule, apologised for not visiting the beach personally. But he said he's fed up with having sand kicked in his face. And at the end of the first round, the scores are 4-4. On to round two now, with this item of interest from a hefty tome called What's On in Halton.
Frodsham Players present Pack of Lies by Hugh Whitemore, a powerful, moving, fictional account of the events leading up to the arrest of Helen and Peter Kroger, convicted of spying for the Russians and sentenced to 20 years imprisonment at the community centre Fluin Lane, Frodsham.
Thanks there to Alison Maddock of Crosby for spotting it. And Richard, here's another question for you. Who's claiming that Satan also moved in strange ways?
This is the Johnny in Manchester. It's a funny thing about people in Manchester. You remember that fellow with the beard who's head of the police?
Yes.
Anderton. Right. They're all in touch with God in Manchester.
Well, there's not a lot else to do in the evening.
I know. As if Anderton was not enough, it emerged that the Johnny in charge of the prison was also in the same line of business. Mr. O'Friel, I believe.
That's right.
RCs, both of them. And,
No, he's spelling that. He's spelling that R full stop, C full stop.
You're quite right, Richard. This all refers to remarks made by Brendan O'Friel, governor of Her Majesty's redevelopment site, Strangeways, Britain's first open plan prison. The recent riot was actually the work of the devil. As he's known there, number 666, Darkness Prince of. The more informed viewpoint suggests the governor might have had a screw loose. But I wouldn't like to comment on that. Earlier, as the dispute was dragging into its third week, Mr. O'Friel was quoted in The Independent offering the following analysis.
I have never ruled out the possibility of other possibilities eventually or at some stage being considered or possibly implemented.
John, your question. What fatherly advice was offered had we fought them on the beaches and lost?
Beaches. It's not the flatulent cow syndrome.
No. That comes later.
Oh.
We can do this quickly.
Yes, those we can.
Listeners ought to know I'm wearing this detachable collar because I have to rush over to a Bayswater hotel and save fallen women. That's why I have to get away quickly. That's why we'll answer this quickly. Churchill told his wife to go out and strangle a German. Also told his daughter to go out and strangle a German in the event of all his speeches not working and the Krauts actually landing at Bournemouth and not being met by enough Leeds United supporters. Churchill suggested that his wife and daughter went down there and strangled one each, having worked out that if 50 million British people strangled a German each, it would be the end of the war. A clear political thinker.
Clement Freud once led a parliamentary delegation to China, on which the present Winston Churchill MP was there. And Clement, because he was the longest-serving MP in the delegation, was the leader. And at the end of it, the Chinaman said to him, "How do you think we've, you know, dealt with you and looked after you?" He said, "Very well." He said, "But I couldn't understand why, when we stayed in that hotel as the leader of the delegation, did I get a nice room, but Mr. Churchill MP, who's junior to me, got the suite on the top floor." And he looked at me and he said, "Well, you must appreciate Mr. Freud." He said, "Mr. Churchill had a very famous grandfather." To which Freud said, "That's the first time I've ever been out grandfathered."
Now, a quick word from the Centralian Advocate.
Wanted: woman to cook and clean fish, dig worms and make love. Must have own boat and motor. Send photo of boat and motor.
Mrs. Espiro of Farnham was onto that one. Charles Kennedy, your turn for some homespun melody. Listen carefully.
Again ye should gang to Maggie's bower. It'll be said against my will. The deepest hole in Clyde's water, my malison you'll fill.
And you may have recognised that as a song called Clyde's Water. Charles, why might the Scottish fishing industry go out with a bang rather than a whimper?
Yeah, I thought it was Chancellor Cole at first when I had the thought of it, Maggie. Because they've been dumping explosives in a hole in the Firth of Clyde, and they suddenly discovered this week that they were dumping them not in the hole, but somewhere else. And there's all these explosives scattered along the coast, which are liable to blow the Scottish fishing industry sky high, which is one way to avoid paying the poll tax.
Well answered. It's because we're told Firth of Clyde trawlermen have been hauling in nets full of dumped explosives and detonators 10 miles away from the officially designated dumping area, or as Glaswegians call it, Edinburgh. And finally, Alan Corran, whose bedside manner could involve putting his toys away?
This is about some kind of quack, is it? This is a general medical council.
Younger chap, extremely young American chap.
Putting his toys away? Quail.
No. Even younger than T. Dan Quayle. Yeah.
Young Yang.
Dr. Owen.
No. We don't talk about him anymore.
I just wanted to embarrass Mr. Kennedy.
Oh, I see. Right.
Bringing his name to him.
Let me tell you, it's another child genius story concerning a New York 12-year-old called Bala Ambati, who was already a third-year university student and set to qualify as a doctor at the age of 17. He says he might have achieved it even earlier if he hadn't wasted all that time learning joined-up writing. And the end of round two, the scores, let me tell you, are Richard and John with 6, but Alan and Charles in the lead with 7. And now a sorry tale from the Dorset Evening Echo.
A West Dorset couple are taking a travel company to court after claiming a winter wonderland break turned into a nightmare. The courier, who was later sacked, was bad-tempered, vague, unhelpful, and unknowledgeable, they said. She told elderly passengers feeling seasick to eat strawberries. It wouldn't make them feel any better, but would be prettier when they threw up.
Anyway, like it or not, that item came from the aptly named Mr. Max Spreader of Dorset. Back to you now, Richard, for this question. Who, for the love of Michael, has been knocking the poll tax?
Is it Mr. Brilliantine?
Ah.
Alias Tarzan, alias Mr. Heseltine.
Right.
Who threw his hat in the ring today. Is it today? No, I've lost all sense of time.
One day last week.
One day last week.
If you're listening to the repeat.
Anyway, he threw his hat in the ring by writing a piece in the Times saying that Maggie should go. No, he didn't say that at all. He denied saying that.
It's all about Michael Heseltine. Michael, what leadership battle Heseltine? Who publicly warned Her Holiness that she won't get a second chance to get the poll tax right. Then, without presuming to tell his leader what to do, he told her what to do. Saying the tax should be based on ability to pay. But, John, it's your question now. Something vaguely connected with music. She's an airhead, stung on a mace. Come on, get paid, stay lost in space. And she's an airhead, thousands in trust. Cusp Aquarius, get serious. And she's an... Well, that was Airhead by Thomas Dolby. John, how is the hot airline chief casting his fate to the wind?
This is must be about flatulent cows.
No, no. No, no, no. This is a story about somebody who tends to use a lot of wind in all kinds of areas.
Is it that Mr. Branson?
It is.
Oh, Mr. Branson, yes. He's a little bearded fellow. Looks rather like Bill Oddie.
That's a pretty unkind thing to say about anybody.
Yes, what's he been doing? I expect he's... I think Richard's going to answer this one.
No, he's not. Oh.
I wish it had been about Thatcher and cows, because that was a much more entertaining story. Has perhaps Richard Branson been breaking wind and destroying the ozone layer?
No, but it's along those lines. You know the answer to this over on the other side?
Yeah, I think Branson's latest thing. What's he up to? Is he trying to fly further in a hot air balloon than anybody
Absolutely
has before? Is that the one?
Yes, yeah. That's the one.
Which is yet another way of trying to avoid the poll tax.
At this time, the Virgin Kings announced that after failing to cross the Atlantic in a balloon, he's going to go one better next time and fail to go right round the world in a balloon. Charles, whose Imperial Majesty is casting deodorant before swine?
You have to read it right to left, actually.
Are you a doctor? Because I can't read your writing.
On behalf of my team, I would say it is Akihito. Akihito and Mrs. Akihito. They bought these premises the uncircumspectness of the Japanese, or simply because it's a very crowded island, they brought it next to a piggery. And what he's had done, he's had all these pigs serviced. People go round with Right Guard and spray the pigs every morning. It has cost £28,000. It's knocking all sorts of ozone.
It's a wonderful story.
Ozone layer.
It's a disaster of a proposed tree planting ceremony in the Japanese countryside to be attended by Emperor Akihito. The four-minute event has so far cost over £700,000 on improvements to the local view, which includes painting electrical pylons green, masking a pig farm with a huge curtain, and training 3,000 nearby pigs to use underarm deodorant.
As in,
I'll ask you your proper question now, Alan.
Right.
Who gave uncharitable motorway police a good run for their money?
Ah, I know this. This was two joggers who ran round the M25 and were stopped by the police on the grounds that nothing was supposed to move along the M25. This was two joggers on the M25, wasn't it?
That's absolutely right. It is the story of two joggers who ran a 10-day, 143-mile charity marathon around London's main drag, the M25. It wasn't until the very end of their jaunt, when they posed for celebratory photographs on a slip road, that police arrested them for walking on the motorway. Apparently, the police had been chasing them for over a week. But it got held up in the traffic. And Richard, your final clue and a chance to hear this meditative clue.
Oh Lord, please hear me. Lend me thine ear. The prayer of a troubled cowboy to hear. No doubt the prayer.
Richard, I have to tell you, that was the Cowboy's Prayer. That's what it was called. That was the name of the piece of music there.
I see.
Richard, where is there another leadership battle starring John Wayne?
Wells is still muttering
not a
about
cow in sight.
Flatulent cows.
No. Not a cow in sight.
Flatulent cowboys.
Not flatulent cowboys. A chap called John Wayne. You're the religious correspondent of the program. You should know this.
John Wayne?
John Wayne.
Is he in Manchester too?
No. No. He happens to be the Bishop of Chelmsford.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Oh.
Is he a last-minute contender?
He is. He's the dark horse, or dark cow. He's
on this program. The petulance among archbishops. So
they're getting the wind up, some of these bishops. Because they see this awful man Habgood looming up.
Who is Maggie's fancy? That's what we all want to know.
Old Chelmsford has very gallantly thrown his mitre in the ring.
Quite right.
In the manner of the sort of Heseltine of the Church of England.
Yes, it is.
Stop Habgood at any cost. I go on that too.
It is all about His Grace John Wayne, Bishop of Chelmsford, according to bookmakers, the 3-1 co-favourite for the Archbishopric of Canterbury.
Ah, hell he is.
Naturally, Michael Heseltine is still ranting on about basing the job on the ability to pray. John, whose finger on the trigger went down a bomb?
Is this the Iraqi having their own triggers?
Yes.
Why bother to send the Channel Tunnel?
Yes.
We already have a gun.
Yes.
I expect we're probably... It's something... Is it... It's probably...
Go on, make Corrin late.
I'm doing my best, yeah. Is it something to do with Iraqi flatulence being the power that will actually send that missile spinning through the air, destroying the ozone layer?
Yes, probably. Yes, you're absolutely right. 2 points quickly on. The question referred to the Baghdad meeting at which President Hussein of Iraq proudly sported a contraband bomb detonator, a souvenir he claims from a recent Scottish fishing trip. It was later identified by British customs as a fitting from a Marley self-assembly home guttering kit. A suitable point to break for this item heard on Radio 4's Today programme of the 8th of January.
A man arrested for possession of explosives has had the charges against him dropped.
Thanks go to Mark Allen of Warwickshire for that. Charles, your last question. This week, where are the last of the hardliners finally going soft?
I know this one.
An Eastern European question.
I know this one.
The last of the hardliners finally going soft.
We used to have little buzzers to press this.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to pass it to the other side. Richard knows.
The answer is Albania.
Thank you, sir.
Albania.
The hard
2 points for Albania.
Albania.
Albania, deux points.
I won't... I could elaborate, but I don't want to detain Corrin any further. But it's actually, the answer is, it's something to do with that. All the Albanians are going to be allowed to have passports.
Yes, something like that. Yes, the answer is Albania, next to Britain, Europe's last remaining hardline state. Long sealed off from the rest of the world, it this week announced relaxations which will bring it into the 19th century. New laws passed include the end of rationing of air, freedom of movement for both feet, and the right to assemble within the privacy of your own home. And finally, Alan, the moment we've all been waiting for.
Japanese story.
No. Better than that. Why has the latest threat to the ozone layer been put out to grass? It's like the good old days, isn't it?
Well, I don't know how to answer this at all. I mean, it was nearly as good as this marvellous other green story, which was about balloons released in a display of sort of international cooperation over Greenpeace are dropping into the sea and killing fish, along with condoms that people are using to, quite properly, guard themselves against AIDS. And the sea is filling with these balloons.
We'll soon be able to walk to Calais, but...
I don't know what happens when a haddock eats a condom. Eventually we shall end up with a mermaid, I suppose. This was the other one. This was the one about bowels. And apparently vegetarian food produces methane, and whether it's eaten by vegetarians or cows. And in the course of their duties later in the day, this stuff goes up. All this grass is translated into gas, which goes up and bangs holes in the ozone layer. The only answer is to eat more cows. I mean, kill them before they fart and get them on the barbecue.
Only way to save us all.
A
I knew we'd get to that eventually. It's all because, according to alleged American experts at Colorado University, the latest contribution to global warming is the 400-litre-per-day methane emission by flatulent cows. Scientists are now considering solutions as diverse as equipping them with catalytic converters. Or merely fitting an appropriately sized cork. All true. However, the best suggestion that I have here seems to be bottling the wind and swearing it in as vice president of the United States. And so, as they would say in Manchester, the end draweth nigh. Before I give the final scores, I'll ask the panellists to impress us in time on a fashion with their wares. Richards, any good cuttings for us?
Well, I got a very sad advertisement from the paper at Hastings. Closing down sale. Due to my ex-wife demanding her share of the business and her general attitude, I am unfortunately unable to continue trading. I would like to thank all my customers and friends for their support, especially Tina. Karen. Gary. Ooh. And my mother.
What a winner. What a winner. John, what have you got for us?
Well, this took my eye in some paper that I can't read the name of, which was Councillor Eileen Bosomworth said any delays could mean the new lifeboat had to be left out in the open where it would be at the mercy of the weather.
Thank you, John. Charles, what have you brought to this hurly-burly?
Well, I stumbled across this in the Telegraph. Businessman Floyd Bennett has been voted the title of Britain's grumpiest boss. Now, apparently his negatives for his employees are concerned is that he moans at them if they spend more than 5 minutes in the toilet, and he ignores them if they don't call him sir. The story goes on. Mr. Bennett, 35, will collect his award in London and says he will not share the champagne with his staff.
Well, thank you. Alan, what have you got for us?
Well, because we didn't have enough Japanese stories this week for my taste, I have something from Wednesday's Daily Telegraph.
Really?
Which says, a self-inflicted blow on the head took Shuhai Nagyo into the ranks of Japanese sumo wrestlers yesterday, 2 months after he was turned down for being too short. He grew 1.5 inches by stretching exercises, then struck himself on the head. As the bump rose, it took him over the 5'8" limit.
Well, that was cool, but not quite good enough, because the scores at the end of the contest are Alan and Charles have brilliantly earned 14, but Richard and John, an even more brilliant victory with 15. Well done. And we end with this sad story from the Evening Standard, sent to us by C.A. Thomas of London.
A woman suffered a broken leg when she was struck by a mechanical hare at Eastville Greyhound Stadium, Bristol. Mari Archer, a track maintenance worker, was checking equipment when a 2-foot-high hare, capable of speeds of up to 30 miles per hour, struck her from behind. She was given first aid by the track vet.
Goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, John Wells, Charles Kennedy MP and Alan Corran. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written and compiled by John Langdon with the producer, Amanda Iannucci.